Okay, welcome everybody to this episode of Silicon Sandbox. And just as a reminder, Mike Shivas, what is Silicon Sandbox?
At Silicon Sandbox, Steve, we like to highlight founders and the startups local to Los Angeles. We love to learn why the founders chose LA and what aspects of the ecosystem here help or even hinder their startup.
Okay, great. Well, with that mission, we have another excellent sort of panel today with us from Heal. And so we have two founders. One, the first, Nick Desai, founder and CEO, and Renee Dua, founder and chief medical officer of Heal. And for full transparency, they are married. So it was amazing to have a couple who are co-founders of a venture like this. So I'm sure we can get into some interesting stories there as well. So Nick and Renee, welcome to the show.
For having
me. Great to be here.
Okay. Well, Nick, can you tell us briefly about Heal? And, you know, you don't have to give us the entire story, but just to get the audience oriented, what is Heal and what does it do?
I'm Nick Desai. Thank you so much for having us. It's an honor to be here in Silicon Sandbox. We're huge believers in Los Angeles and the entrepreneurial scene here, as we'll talk about. My wife and I started Heal 6 years ago here in Los Angeles with the basic, simple idea of bringing your family doctor back to your family room as an in-person doctor house calls. And the idea has since expanded to include all of your care coming to you, whether a doctor is knocking on your door or you're clicking on a phone and doing video telemedicine. We believe that you should not have to leave your house for quality healthcare. And in fact, it turns out that the best place to deliver primary care is in the privacy and safety of your own home, not just because you're not getting exposed to other people's germs, which everyone's thinking about right now because of COVID, but because the home is the only place where a doctor can truly see what's called your social determinants of health, your home environment, your fall risk, your lifestyle, your mildew, your medications, and the kinds of things that allow a doctor to create a more personal, more precise care plan for you. And so here we are 6 years later, we're covered by most major insurance plans in all of the markets in which we operate, which is 8 states around the country, primarily throughout California. And we're covered by about 25 insurance plans, and we've delivered about 250,000 doctor house calls and telemedicine interactions since we launched. And that's what Heal is.
That's an amazing story. So, you know, as we were thinking about inviting you guys to the show, you know, one of us sort of said, hey, this is sort of like, you know, Uber for doctors. And I don't know if that's a common reference, but, you know, essentially through an interface or through your app, you could basically call a doctor to your house. So I think the best ideas are sometimes the simplest. And right. This makes a ton of sense. So I guess the real key question was, Nick, was it your idea or Renee's idea? Whose idea was it actually?
Renee, why don't you take that one?
When we started Heal, Nick's mom was staying with us, and we were just about to have children, and Nick's mom was with us. And I said, you know, Mom, I'm so overwhelmed in my nephrology practice that I think what I want to do is work with Nick, and he's going to be my medical assistant, and he's going to drive me around, and he's going to help me deliver house calls in our community. And she said to me, I forbid you from going into people's homes. And actually, you know, I think Nick and I really loved the idea of turning what we knew to be good medical care on its side and making it more personalized and making it more understandable. You know, even the work we went through to have children was so crazy for us. We had such a honestly life-changing, life-altering experience making our family, that what we've done with Heal is really in the name of our own personal experiences. And everything we do is about creating a vision where it's literally the doctor and her patients in the living room.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when you think about changing healthcare using technology to simplify and remove points of friction and reduce bureaucracy and reduce costs, you need a really great doctor, which Renee certainly is, and a really great engineer, which I hope I am. I'm certainly an engineer. And it's not just that we're husband and wife, but it was a percolation of a combination of conversations and instances and sitting in the ER one day and that conversation Renee just mentioned that led us to think we have to completely reinvent healthcare. And the Uber analogy is appropriate in the front end in that you can book via an app, the simplification of how you access the service. On the back end, it's different because unlike Uber, where you don't care who your driver is, you just want to get from point A to point B, you do care who your doctor is. And with Heal, you can build a long-term relationship. We, our kids see the same Heal pediatrician for all their scheduled care, yet if we need urgent care on a Sunday, it'll be whatever Heal pediatrician's available, right? The beauty of Heal is that we operate and are available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We're coming into the holidays here, whether it's Christmas Day, New Year's Day, or any other day, Heal is available. And what that does is it provides timely access to quality care so that people don't rush to the ER and the urgent care for every little thing. And we as we've gotten into it, we've realized that every aspect of healthcare is so broken, we have to be willing to reinvent everything to reinvent anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, fascinating all around, but you guys mentioned it, and I have to dig a little bit deeper. So Renee, you talked about life transformational way of delivering your baby. Nick, you mentioned ER. I have to ask you, like, what happened? What happened in the delivery of your baby?
It wasn't in the delivery. It was when our son was 7 months old, and Renee can tell you what happened that Friday afternoon.
Yeah, we had been dealing, our son was born prematurely. And so we had been dealing with a lot of the ramifications of a baby born prematurely. And it was a Friday night and we wound up having to go to the pediatrician's office. And she said, well, look, I'm closing. I can't help you. It's 5 o'clock. And I thought, wow, what does that have to do with what time of the day it is, what day of the week it is?
Yeah.
So she sent us to the emergency room, and it happens that I trained at that same hospital. And so we waited many hours to be evaluated. And by the time an attending physician came in who knew me, he said, what are you doing here? I mean, you're a doctor. Why do you need to see a doctor, right? Why don't you know what to do? And I thought, well, that's silly. I'm a mother. I'm not a doctor. This is my child and I want your help. Ironically, we had waited so long to be seen that our boy got better. Right? So crisis averted. But it was an interesting drive home where we thought, you know, medicine, we're all scientists, right? We forget the compassion, right? We forget to think about how we feel as patients, how we want to be helped as human beings, right? And so Heal focuses on that relationship. As Nick mentioned, I kind of cringe when I hear Uber for doctors because the model of Uber is get there. The model for Heal is see her again and again to help you, right? And so that is, it's a distinguishing factor in what we're trying to build is a relationship.
Yeah, that's great. And I always think about, you know, when entrepreneurs or startup people talk about Uber 4X, there's a great article I'd always send them to. I think it's someone from Benchmark Capital wrote something back in the age of Uber when it was just starting to come up. And he urged startup people and entrepreneurs to think about if your startup is about creating a market, you really have to look at it very carefully through these 10 lenses. And one of the things I remember I took away from that is that one of Uber's successes is that it unlocked a huge pent-up demand for the service, and therefore it resulted in this huge market expansion, right? Uber did not just replace taxi cabs, it tapped into this massive, massive demand for their service such that people use Uber way more often than they used to use taxi cabs. As you guys describe your service, I mean, it sounds amazing. It sounds really attractive to me. It sounds like you've solved a lot of these issues. So, you know, Can you tell me a bit about like how it actually works in a nuts and bolts sense during the pandemic? If I have one of your doctors, if I have a Heal doctor come to my house, do they meet outside right now, or do you have to come in with PPE? How does it actually work? I'm so intrigued.
Well, so look, I think it's a very important question. And I want to go back to a fundamental point you made, right? And I actually know the guy at Benchmark you're talking about, the name is slipping my head, but what Uber did is not just replace the taxi cab, right? It fundamentally redefined transportation, right? When I'm a 50-year-old man, and when I was in my early 20s and young people used to go out to drink or whatever, there was always this question of, how are we going to get home safely? How are we going to get there safely? I mean, you didn't, unless you were crazy and wanted to drink and drive, that was always a question. It's no longer a question. It's literally never a question, right? Everyone just Ubers everywhere, right? Yeah. If a girl was going to get into a car with a guy, she was worried. What, you know, I'm at this guy's mercy, but now she can hopefully most of the time safely get into an Uber, right? And the downstream impact of things like this is transformative to the way we live our lives. Right? Heal has that same impact. And what we didn't want to do is be an urgent care on wheels. Hey, we'll come to you instead of the ER urgent care, even though that's where the idea started. We wanted to become your doctor. And how does that relate to the answer to your question about how it works? Is what we offer is, well, a lot of companies in healthcare are thinking, oh, we're going to do telehealth. First of all, healthcare is broken and going to the doctor's office sucks, right? Even doctors who work in doctor's offices don't like going to doctor's office.
Right.
But in that context, there's, okay, we're going to do telehealth. We're going to be a concierge doctor's office. There's companies out there that are nicer doctor's offices and they have better Wi-Fi in the waiting room. I don't care how good the Wi-Fi is in the waiting room. I don't want to wait. Right? And I don't want to be sitting in a room with other germ-filled people, right? What we do is we want to become your family doctor in your family room. And the way that we do that is we don't let you have to pick a modality of care. When you're sick, when your kids are sick, when your parents are sick, the last thing you want to think about is, should I go to the ER? Should I go to the urgent care? Should I use telehealth? Should I wait for a doctor's office? You just want to talk to a qualified doctor. And that doctor will decide, I'm going to talk to you by video telemedicine, or I'm going to come to your house. And if we do come to your house during the age of COVID, yes, our doctors are very frequently tested for COVID. We also screen the patients ahead of time and make sure they don't have COVID-like symptoms. And then the doctors wear full top, head to toe, you know, personal protective equipment with the idea that it's not just COVID. COVID's a very serious issue, and a lot of people are dying from it right now. But so is your diabetes, and so is your hypertension, and so is your heart disease. And just because COVID isn't affecting you because you're staying in your house, if you ignore those other issues, they will affect you. And so what we've done is we've created a safe way for patients to be connected to their doctor all the time. They're always at a touch of a button. And if that button says, I want the doctor to come to my house, or if that button says, I want to talk to the doctor by video, that's great. We can do both of those and give you the comfort of knowing that your doctor is always with you.
Great. So I think we do have some video from Heal just to kind of give people, our audience, an orientation too. So we can go into the specifics.
Proposals aside, why is healthcare in the United States so expensive?
I think that we're spending a whole lot of money administering a system that actually doesn't work very well.
Our healthcare delivery needs a massive shakeup.
Long wait times have really been the major challenges.
Anytime you see business, innovation, and medicine coming together, that's a great thing.
The mission we have for Heal is that every American, regardless of income or age or health condition, can get access to high quality primary care in the comfort and safety of their own home.
Heal and others now want to change the way we see our doctor.
So the goal of Heal is to be your primary care provider. There is the capacity to do a lot more in the home than you realize.
Forbes magazine just named Nick Desai among the 10 CEOs changing healthcare.
He explains how an app is helping change the future of healthcare in today's DBL
apps
spotlight.
Delivering doctors to your doorstep.
Walk in your door and we already know so much about you. You won't have that same exchange in an office.
I could not say enough about this service.
It's almost like they're working on my timeline.
I highly recommend Heal.
We get to spend more time with them and they're not in an environment where they have to wait to see us.
The emphasis for us really has been about patient care.
Companies in the telehealth space are expanding as they adapt to help people stay healthy while staying at home. One of them is Heal, number 13 on CNBC's Disruptor 50 list this year.
Considerable energy and money is being put into healthcare initiatives.
Humana just invested $100 million in virtual and home care provider Heal.
The app Heal just launched a new collaboration to get the full picture.
Telemedicine screen is a big help for us because it allows us to evaluate a patient without being in the living room.
Healthcare is a fundamental human right, and equality of access to quality care is a foundational principle of that right.
How does it work from the mechanics, as Mike was getting to? I sign up, I download Heal. I assume I put in some information about myself. And then am I assigned a specific primary physician or do I choose? Or can you give us at least just a high level walkthrough of, I don't know anything about Heal. What does it do for me in the first few minutes?
Renee?
So that's right. You download the app. We take insurance, right, which is wonderful. We also have a very reasonable cash pay price, which is wonderful. So you can enter your credit card. You book a visit. And typically, upon the first visit, you won't pick your doctor because we're going to dispatch a doctor in your community. And you're going to meet her and you're going to decide if you want her to be your doctor. And the classic example that I think we see here in Los Angeles is a child gets a visit booked and mom or dad is home and mom or dad meets the pediatrician. They make a decision for a care plan based on a sick visit or maybe the need for vaccinations or a school physical. And typically we do it in the home, in the living room. To Nick's point, we wear protective equipment. We bring our own kit. We bring our own iPad. We evaluate the child with mom or dad or guardian present. And we don't want other kids in the room. We don't want other parents or guardians in the room because, again, we want to keep that physical separation and no unnecessary exposures. Once we're done, we typically chart our note, and you can see your note, your labs, all this information right on our app. So you know exactly what happened. As well, we book the follow-up. So we use the software to book the follow-up, and in that follow-up, we say, okay, Junior needs X number of vaccines in the next visit. or we will see junior in a year unless mom has a sick visit concern. So we make a plan for follow-up as well. And then at that point, you can choose to keep that same pediatrician, or you can say, I love this so much, let me add my family onto the app and book an internist visit, or somebody, you know, somebody's grandparent can book a visit in the same setting. It's pretty cool how we allow you to add on the entire family so that everyone can access house calls and healthcare this way.
So do they have a Heal medical cart they roll in with all the...
Exactly right. It's, we have a medical kit and we have our, you know, adorable logo all over everything, so you can tell it's ours. And in that medical kit, we have the basics to do anything a physician can do in a doctor's office. We come equipped with an iPad. You know, we can do hearing screens, vision screens, vaccine administration. There's so little we don't do actually in these house calls. And I like to also share that we do remote monitoring. So let's suppose, you know, Junior is diabetic. We can remotely monitor his blood sugars. And a week later, we can do a video chat and say, okay, you know, the baby's there, the child is there, mom is there, we're going over the blood sugars together on video chat. We don't always have to be in the living room to offer this very high touch experience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Have you guys found that the corona pandemic has served as a catalyst for growth for you, or more of a headwind?
So I think that the first thing that, you know, we get asked this question a lot in the media, and the first thing that we always want to emphasize is this is a catastrophic national American tragedy, right? We're approaching 300,000 Americans dead, 3,000 people dying a day. So I don't like there's no term in which this should be talked about against the catastrophic human impact of this, right? As it relates to Heal, what it has done is accelerated the conversation that we've been pushing for 5.5 years before the pandemic, which is you don't need to go to a doctor's office to get healthcare, right? Whether you have a doctor come to your house, whether you have telemedicine, whether you have remote monitoring, in 5 years, our hope is that it seems as crazy for you to have to go to a doctor's office to get healthcare, for primary care at least, as it does to go to a Blockbuster to get a video right now, right? My 2-year-old daughter, our youngest, we now have 3 monkeys, and our youngest already knows, she goes on her iPad by herself and clicks YouTube and clicks her little videos and watches them, right? She will never know what a DVD is. She'll never know what a VCR is. And the same way, I don't think she'll ever know what a doctor's office is, because she never needs to go to one, right? So the pandemic has accelerated that, and I think that's a tectonic shift. I always give this analogy, right? It was 24-hour news before the first Gulf War, if you remember, but it was that first Gulf War when Wolf Blitzer was talking and you could see the cruise missile coming into the person's house and wherever they were bombing and whatever, that made people like, shit, I gotta tune into this, right? And that, I think we're seeing that same tectonic shift because of this virus right now, where house calls or home-based care is not a secondary alternative, but shifting to a primary alternative.
That's right. I mean, we never built the company predicting a pandemic, but we've certainly been prepared. So we've been able to deliver access and deliver improved outcomes using our software. And that's, ironically, always been the goal.
Yeah. So how do you, I guess if I'm a doctor and Renee, if I were Dr. Dua, and you know, what, how do you convince me to make a house call where in some ways what you're doing is so cutting edge, in some ways it's a flash to the past where you have doctors going to homes. You know, do doctors say, what do you mean? I don't do that. I want to stay in my fancy, you know, hospital or my medical office and have people come to me. I'm the doctor. I mean, do you have to fight some of these preconceptions? Like, how do you get them to go in their car and do house calls?
Yeah, back to the Uber analogy, Steve, you're talking about supply side, right? Which is another thing that
That's right. It's really a two-sided marketplace here, right?
In fact, and it's a great question. In fact, no, because the doctors that apply to work with us, their specific concern is they are not able to adequately and appropriately take care of patients in the office setting. They don't care about the chandelier, right? They want to spend time and they want to get to know their patients and they want to build these relationships. When you're in a house call, you see so much without asking a single question, right? The Cheetos, the cigarettes, you know, 12 people in a one-up.
Did you come to my house the other day?
No, it's not a job, right? It's not a reality of how we live, especially during a pandemic, right? We're all struggling with stress eating and anxiety and panic. And so seeing this in a person's element is wonderful. And for us doctors that are focused on patient care, because that's the thing, right? It's very easy to practice in a turnstile and just burn out. And that's a reality for physicians. For us, the magic words are, I want to spend time with my patients. When I hear a physician or a provider tell me that, I think, okay, this is a person that wants to move forward with a model like that, like this. She will make it work. She will go into a person's living room, PPE on. She will take notes. She will examine her patients and she will stay until the problems are solved. That's the sort of physician that joins the team.
Interesting. So do they fully work for you full time or do they have their own practices or they're on your payroll?
Physicians on our payroll. That's right.
And the one thing that we like to say about this, right, is because people use the word two-sided marketplace. We're not, in the sense that
right,
our doctors, right?
Okay, yeah.
So all you have to do to be an Uber driver is have a driver's license and be 18, which is everybody, right? Or almost everybody, and not be a felon and whatever else the case may be. But it's hundreds of millions of people. To be a doctor, you have to go to medical school for 12 years in residency and fellowship and all these different things. And so we realized very early on, and Renee said this when we first founded the company, you can't fix medicine for patients unless you fix it for doctors first. And we are reinventing medicine for doctors by automating the bureaucracy and the business process. And I'm going to give you one quick example that goes back to the nuts and bolts of how Heal works, right? Whether you use Heal on the Heal app or the Heal website, which is just heal.com, or you call our toll-free number, which is, I'm sorry, shameless plug, but 844-644-HEAL, H-E-A-L, again, super easy to remember.
We'll put it on the bottom here.
There you go, 844-644-HEAL or heal.com. I'm the shameless promoter here.
Absolutely.
But whether you do that, one of the biggest pain points that people have in healthcare is they don't know. The only thing we buy as Americans that we don't know how much it's going to cost up front is healthcare, right? The one thing we all need is the most price elusive thing, right? If I buy a car, I know what's going to be down to the nickel. If I buy a pizza, I know what's going to be down to the nickel. If I go to healthcare, I'm going to get 6 weeks later this thing called an explanation of benefits, which is neither explanatory nor beneficial. And then 6 weeks after that, I'm going to get some bill for $28. And 50% of all Americans that have bad credit because of unpaid medical bills of $200 or less. Many people can pay that $200, they just didn't know about the bill in the first place. So what we did is we offered the patient upfront price transparency. We built a real-time AI-based engine that checks with your insurance company, confirms that you have coverage, tells you what your copay is, there's never a premium to use Heal, and we collect that. But you know what that does for doctors? It gets them out of the billing and collections business. You don't walk in the doctor's office, they're like, wait, you owe $8 from last time, right? Doctors don't want to be in the collection business. So we reduce cost, we remove friction for the patient, and we liberate doctors all in one step. We did this for every aspect of consumer and provider facing healthcare to liberate and automate and remove, make the experience seamless. And that's why we're able to attract great doctors and keep, give patients the kind of experience that they want and expect.
So how do you, you know, and I have some family members who are physicians as well. And, you know, you're right. They often complain about the turnstile nature of what they have to do. And 10 minutes, you got to get see the next person or the economics doesn't work. So if you describe in your sense, they sort of go and take care of business. There's the drive time to get there. There's the nice to meet you and greet. When you go into somebody's house, you got to maybe do the pleasantries. You're rolling in with the Heal kit. You fix the problem. Maybe stay for a little bit for a chit chat. I mean, you could have seen 10 patients if you were in another place. So does the economics work for you where you can actually do that and still be profitable?
Yeah. So here's the secret to this. Healthcare is broken because it's inefficient. The doctor's seeing 40 patients a day in their office. The first 32 pay the rent, the bureaucracy, the overhead, the uncollected bills, and all of that stuff. If you automate and get rid of all that, guess what? The doctor can spend more time with each patient. And here's the thing. The only way to lower healthcare costs is to improve health outcomes, right? The only lasting way. All that you're doing otherwise, if you deny people care, all you're doing is pushing the can down the road. And ultimately, it's going to cost more later. Right? An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. In healthcare, every dollar invested in effective primary care saves $13 in total healthcare costs. So when a doctor is able to spend more time with you, it's not about fixing the issue. It's about understanding the patient. As Renee said, when they meet and greet you, they're going to learn a lot about you. They're going to talk about what is causing your diabetes? Why are you not taking the medication? What is really going on here? One in four seniors in America has food insecurities, which means they can't afford enough to eat. They don't have enough food to eat. One in five children. This is really sad, but it's true. And it's critical to a doctor's ability to create a care plan that's actually effective for the patient. So in each interaction, we can deliver substantially more value, and the economic model works because we monetize that value while actually lowering the healthcare cost by removing the friction and bureaucracy.
A friend of mine who's a pediatric oncologist was shocked at how little follow-up care there was. So his patients would leave the hospital, and even though the hospital knew so much about the patient and about the treatment, they didn't leverage that data. They didn't use the data to extend the quality of the care and the time of the care. It sounds like you are beyond this automation and the efficiency that Nick was just talking about. You're also going to have a tremendous amount of data. So can you individual people? So can you talk about your plans for the future on how you can, help that use that to help people in the long term?
Renee?
I mean, you're right. There's a huge disconnect. And pediatric oncology is one of these specialties, and God bless the doctors that do it, where, they become the patient's, sole focus of care, right? And the vast majority of children don't need a pediatric oncologist. They just need good primary care. And children, they get depressed, they have anxiety, they gain weight, they lose weight, they need to be vaccinated. So it's a really important thought, and one we are, to your exact point, very focused on. With each visit, we collect tons of data, and part of that data is, okay, it's been 2 months, we need to see you again, or in your house is not only Junior, but Willie and Billy and Millie, and we need to take care of all of them too. So we market this way, we share our services this way, and what we are building is a population health model, to your point, that we know how a child is living. Is she in a home of people who smoke? Is she in a home of people who use marijuana? Is she in a home where people live near a freeway, or there is depression or anxiety, or a single family or single guardian? How can we help her stay well so that she doesn't grow up and get heart disease and strokes and heart attacks and kidney disease? That's exactly and entirely what we're trying to build here. It's a huge undertaking.
And Renee, do you charge more for a house visit versus a tele visit, or how does it work?
It works with how your insurance works. So your insurance dictates the price of your visit and the copay cost, and it's often similar to whatever an office-based practice is. In COVID, all of these codings and billings are all a mess right now, right? But we always have kept our cash pay rates very, very low and acceptable to insurance payers, right? Insurance payers want their patients to be using their insurance, so they get nervous when we're cheaper, right? So right. We keep low cash pay prices, but we always do have a certain number of patients who are using cash to use our services.
Okay, so what is that about? If you wouldn't mind asking, is it $100, $200, $500?
Nick is going to help you.
Yeah. So first, for the vast majority of people who do have some form of health insurance, and we accept almost all major PPO and HMO plans, including straight Medicare, you will never pay more for Heal than you would for another doctor services. And there's no premium fee for Heal. Okay. Number two, with COVID, most insurance plans have gotten rid of the copays for any kind of primary care, whether it's telemedicine or house calls. So it's often $0 out of pocket. Mm-hmm. All preventative care, such as a well-child exam and annual physical, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, is also $0 out of pocket. And we can do that in your home. And we do that right now today. Okay. And if there is a copay, again, it's that primary care copay, typically between $5 and $15, but often zero, as little as $0, right? If you don't have any kind of insurance, we have two options available. We have a one-time cash price of $159 for a single house call, or $79 for a single telemedicine interaction. And then we have a subscription plan we call Heal Pass, which can be as low as $49 per month so that you can get unlimited access to Heal house calls and telemedicine, virtually unlimited, I should say. So I think it's 8 house calls and telemedicine, or 8 telemedicine per year, which is a lot. The average person goes to the doctor about 3.5 to 3.5 times a year. So for a very low price, it's not a replacement for insurance, but it does give you the comfort of knowing that you have great primary care available to you without having to worry about the outlay every single time.
Got it. This is like too good to be true. So I guess the question is, you talked about good quality physicians, right? And I remember I lived in the Bay Area for a while, and they had a commercial, I think Kaiser Permanente, about, you know, we have amazing doctors. They're from Harvard and Stanford and, you know, all these places. And that was part of their, I think it was Kaiser Permanente that had that commercial campaign. So what, one, quality of the physicians that you have, and two, are they all primary care? Is that what you do, or do you go into any specialties? So can you talk about what the physicians are typically like there?
I'll take that one. So we too have the doctors from Harvard and Stanford and whatnot. not that I think there's a clinical correlation there, but yes, we have doctors with very impressive resumes. But I think ultimately, you know, there is a type of doctor that wants to work at Kaiser, and there's a type of doctor that wants to work at Heal, right? And so a doctor that works at Kaiser may want something that is more turnkey, whereas we're looking to work with doctors who are more, in some ways, entrepreneurial. They like the aspect of spending more time with patients. They like the idea of using software to improve outcomes. And that's what we source for. Right? Not every doctor can sit in your living room and give you a great experience. And we want the ones that can.
Right. So do you have a training program for your doctors to go through? They have to meet these 15-point inspection?
Oh yeah. They are vetted and trained at ad nauseum. And we're very focused on that, actually, because again, it is one thing to sit at a desk and have that turnstile experience. And that is not what will work for us. We don't want that for our patients. Additionally, our patients are seen by often the same doctor over and over. The notes are done within the day, right? The labs are shared pretty immediately. So when you take better care of fewer people, the quality goes way up, and we expect that of our doctors as well.
And we, the training is an ongoing, rigorous, continuous program, because we're always innovating software tools to better empower and enable the doctors to make better decisions at the point of care. And so we're always updating them. Hey, this is new. This is available. This is new. This is by emails, by webinars, by phone calls. We're always training them. Back to your answer about primary care. Our doctors are all primary care in the sense that they're pediatrics, internal medicine, or family medicine. But we also offer, because we consider an integral part of primary care, mental and behavioral health services. So we have licensed clinical psychologists, which is an important thing, because you can't treat someone's diabetes without treating their mental health issues and vice versa, right? Often someone is depressed or has anxiety and they don't even realize it, but that's why they're eating badly or they're not taking their medications. And so we offer both of those services so that your primary care doctor cannot just say, hey, you should see a mental health professional, but can book that slot for you. And on the same video platform, you can talk to your psychologist from Heal as well as your primary care doctor, and they can integrate and coordinate care for you.
Got it. So how many, just to give everybody a sense of size, how many physicians do you have working for Heal? Just, you don't have to give me specifics, but just orders of magnitude.
Well over 100 throughout the country.
Got it. So you are, in that way, you are basically a hospital. They work.
We are basically a panel of, we're a medical practice, right? We're a panel of physicians that delivers care using a software platform. Unlike a university hospital or a hospital system.
Right.
But our home is software.
But to clarify that point, Steve, just to, hospitals as we think of them now have become this building where you go for all your health care, right? But that's not really what hospitals were designed for. Facility-based care is very, very expensive, right? The overnight stay in a hospital costs about $14,000 to $15,000 a night, as we're learning right now during COVID with all these people in hospitals. Hospitals are for emergency rooms, for intensive care, for surgery, for the kinds of things that cannot be done in the home. We are a primary care practice, as Renee said, a medical practice that, if you use Heal correctly, you will go to the hospital less and you will get more of the care in your home and you'll spend more time being well and less time getting well.
So let me ask you some questions about your software platform. Is it a mobile first solution? And as a patient of yours, how much access do I have about to my own data and how would I get to it?
Renee?
Certainly. So on our platform, it's all your data, right? You can access all of it. And so you can do that for you, your family, your partner, your parents, his, her parents. And what we do is we try to share as much as possible. So not only can you see how you paid, what you paid for, but if compliant, right? Of course, there are certain things you may not want to see or your partner may not want you to see. By and large, you can share all of that data with, for example, if you want to share your child's vaccine records, you can literally download it and email it along to the school administrator, right? So we give you full control both on the web and on the app of your own data.
That sounds amazing. So if I were to go into a facility and get, say, like an MRI, do I automatically have access to that data like within your...
So if we've ordered the MRI for you, the whole process of the doctor ordering the MRI and then the processing to get it covered and so your insurance will pay for it, we don't share all of that with you. You don't need it. But ultimately, the results will be shared with you by our physician. She will call you. She will say, here is your you'll go, you'll get the MRI. You'll be notified that it's ready to go and even where you can go. The nearest in-network imaging center. Once you get the MRI done, we'll get the results back and we will share them with you and we will also chart them for you. So they're always a part of your patient profile.
So do you guys consider software engineering part of Heal's core competency?
So we are, it's funny that you say that because we are engineers, right? There are providers out in the field delivering care that are enabled by our engineers, right? Our vision was to use technology to reinvent healthcare. And our engineering team is always growing and getting bigger, but the key to Heal succeeding, right, is the engineering. And you know, Steve, you said, all of this sounds too good to be true. It is, except if you have to run it like Renee and pound your head against these brick walls to make engineering go faster, to make innovation go faster, right? Our vision is always step far ahead, as with all entrepreneurs, of where reality is. And healthcare is a very hard industry in which to make change, right? Healthcare records are siloed and people don't want to give them up. And if it's in this hospital, they won't give it to that hospital. With Heal, you own your records, but yes, we are an engineering company, a product and software innovation company that is liberating doctors to deliver care. Is Uber a transportation company or a software company? It's both. It can't be one without the other, right? In the same way, or is Amazon, right? Amazon is so successful at hosting websites, they created Amazon Web Services, right? And it's become the most profitable part of Amazon. In the same way, we are a software company that innovates software to make this possible.
So let's shift gears and talk business a little bit, Nick. You know, you guys, for our listeners and viewers, pretty impressive. I think you just knocked down $100 million of funding. At least that was the last publicly sort of noted funding round. And it looks like you have an amazing investor base as well. So let's talk a little bit about the business side. First, you know, hundreds of or more than 100 physicians on payroll. That's one side of it. What does the rest of the company look like? You know, just give us orders of magnitude of size and functions. Like who works at Heal?
So there's about 250 to 275 total people. There's doctors, there's nurse practitioners, there's psychologists, there's medical assistants who accompany the doctors and do things like blood draws and stuff right in the home. Then there's the office team, as we call it, although everyone's working remotely right now. There's engineers, product people, QA people, software people. There's operations and phone support people, right? We take a great deal of pride in the fact that if you call our phone number, you get a human being to answer the phone call, right? And there are billing and coding people, and there are all of these things. But the goal is fundamentally the two largest departments at Heal should always be the providers, first and foremost, that should be the most, right? And then engineering and innovation second, and then everything else should be third, right?
Yeah.
Marketing, business development. We have a total of 6 people across marketing, business development, the entire company, because the product sells itself. Right. And yes, we want to sell it more and we want to grow faster, but the product sells itself if the engineering is done right and the providers are enabled to deliver great care. Renee says something that her mom told her, that great, if you deliver great care, people, you'll grow. The patients will be there. People are thirsty, hungry for great healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's take, you know, I had a little stint as a venture capitalist in my previous life as well. So as I think about your business, there's no doubt the consumer proposition here. Obviously, I get to stay in my home, have doctors come to me. Awesome. Affordable. Awesome. So in terms of though growth for you and how to scale where you are to become, you know, $1 billion in revenue plus business, what are you up against? Is it the speed of you hiring doctors, or how do you think about growth for Heal?
Renee?
I mean, this is a great question, right? So as Nick said, the business markets itself, but there is an interest that certainly Nick and I have to deliver access. And so if you look at states like Louisiana or Georgia or South Carolina, there are shortages of doctors and providers. Lucky for us, they want to work with us. Lucky for us, there are hosts of patients there that need this concept of value-based care. And to Nick's point, when you're offering excellent care and people aren't using the emergency room, and when they're not using urgent care, when they're not getting useless medications and unnecessary referrals, that's saving billions of dollars, all of which is part of how we will operate our model, right? It's cost savings, and that money will be shared with us. So that's how we think about building a $1 billion business, doing good work.
Yeah. So is it a matter of you just lighting up new states, or what you said primarily, I think you said 8 states, but primarily in California? How do you turn up New York or Texas? What needs to happen for that to happen?
So look, I just to clarify, when I said primarily California, I mean we're throughout most of the major markets in California. But for example, we already are live in New York City, in Atlanta, Georgia, in Washington, D.C., in Seattle, Washington, and a number of other places. But you asked what we're up against. We're up against everything. right? That's the nature of healthcare, unfortunately, right? Literally, we know this, presidential elections are won and lost on healthcare, right? Obama won because he wanted to do this, and Trump won because he wanted to undo that, and this guy won. It's crazy, right? Everyone's got their fingers in healthcare, yet very few people are talking about how to improve access, how to lower cost, how to deliver more preventative care, right? And so we're up against regulations. We're up against the friction of, hey, there's this weird perception in American patients that if I go to UCLA or some great well-known hospital, and if I sit there for 6 hours, well, the doctor must be really good because I had to, people actually say, you know, I had to wait for my doctor for 3 hours, right? It must be a good doctor. Where is it written that the longer you wait, the better the doctor gets? Maybe the worse the doctor gets, right? And UCLA has great doctors. I'm not picking on them. But my point is that we're up against everything from patient inertia to insurance companies to regulations to the ability. Yeah, we could launch up 10 new markets, but are we going to deliver the same exceptional quality that Renee and her providers are committed to? Are we going to do it with the same ease of use and friction? Is the regulations in Louisiana the same as North Carolina, the same as Georgia, the same as California? And it turns out, no, they're completely different. They're Byzantine, right? Cities and states have different regulations, right? So to change healthcare is hard. And Americans, unfortunately, think of healthcare outside of a pandemic situation as they think of a parking spot, which is, when I want to park because I got to get in and get to that store, my kid's got to pee and he's about to wet his pants, a parking spot in the mall is really valuable to me. But the moment I leave, I never think about, oh, who else is using that parking spot? Should I save it for later? No, nobody ever thinks like that, right? With healthcare, in other countries that are developed countries where they have good life expectancies, Japan and parts of Europe, people think about healthcare proactively, but Americans don't. We're used to just getting everything like this. And so changing that mindset to build a relationship, to have care when you need it, we're up against, it's not what thing are we up against, we're up at what thing are we not up against.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're attacking a lot of the inertia in the space that you're and you're thinking very, very in a very large context about that, right? You guys are thinking very big.
It's not even the inertia, it's the silliness, right? It's, for example, you can't find a lab open on Saturday or Sunday. Why? Right? Like, people shouldn't have their labs drawn. You have to take a day off to get your labs drawn. How does that make any sense? Or, you know, a medication, right? You can't have a medication after six. You know, what if you work? Is the idea that you take off time from work to get healthcare? That doesn't make any sense, right? Not everybody celebrates Christmas. Why is our healthcare system operating as though the 25th of December or Saturday and Sunday are special, right? So I think it's one of these, it's not even inertia. It's not even common sense at some point, right? Like, in America, certainly, and around the world, it doesn't matter what day of the week or time it is, you can get sick. And we want to be there for you, right? And then we want you to know and have the peace of mind that we're going to take care of you. And to Nick's point, we hit our heads and, you know, come up against walls, and then we set back and start over and think again and start something else. And that's how it goes, step by step.
Are there fast moving startups that you are afraid of, or what else is there that keeps you up at night?
Look, I'll say, and this ties to the inertia point, right? That we like to think that we're big thinkers, right? That's why Renee and I got married and found each other in life, and I think we make great business partners, even though we butt heads sometimes. But we like to think we make good business partners, but what keeps me up at night? Everything, right? The startups I haven't heard of, the regulatory change that might happen. How do I get this out there fast enough? How do I get enough engineers to do this? How do I change this thing? And the thing I always say is, in some industries, if you are making content and you want to stream it, the only real regulation, other than, you know, don't pornography and stuff like that, which is important. The only real thing is make content people actually want, right? What we're learning from streaming is if people like it, they'll watch it, right? What is this, the Queen's Gambit right now that everyone's watching, right?
Great show.
Great show. I between three kids and Heel, there's no time to watch any shows, but I get your point. It must be a great show because
great show,
right? It's all over. So great. All you have to do is figure out how to make it, right? And then the rest takes you. There's no inertial forces. There's no friction against it. So the competitive forces are everywhere, whether it's a doctor's office or a big giant institution like Kaiser running around saying thrive and we have the best doctors, but they have 50 times or 100 times the marketing budget we do, right? It's everything, right? So I'm at my point in my entrepreneurial career where I worry about everything. And I worry about, you know, and the only thing we can do is keep our heads to the ground, keep innovating, keep reading, keep thinking, right? Renee will always says this to anyone she interviews at Heal, that are you prepared to keep learning about healthcare? Because I spend at least an hour of my day reading about what's new about healthcare. Between yesterday and today, there was new stuff that happened. Renee and I share articles with each other. And you have to synthesize and process and think, how does this affect our business a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now? In fact, when we started Heal, Medicare did not allow house calls to seniors unless they were medically homebound. We were instrumental in convincing Medicare to change that rule. Right at that level, all the way down to this doctor seeing this patient at this time on this day, from the top to the bottom, we have to be thinking.
Right, that's amazing, and I can't imagine what you'd have to go through every day for issues that
well,
you know.
I used to have hair when we started.
You know them. So how, you know, I guess, you know, we talked about you raising $100 million. You know, a lot of our themes for Silicon Sandbox for our listeners who may have great ideas. And again, to the beauty of your idea, it was simple. People understand. And the execution is very, very difficult. So from that car ride back, maybe Renee, that you had, you know, in discussing with Nick's mother, I think, or what, from that concept to now becoming a hot startup with $100 million of funding, at least that last round, you're at a size where you could actually celebrate a little bit of your amazing success. But were there critical moments from the zero to where you are now that really made the difference? Was it somebody you knew? Was it, you know, a technology, or what are a couple of those moments where you think you went to the next level and helped you to break through?
I mean, there are critical moments every day. Today, I was reading about a patient who saw one of our physicians in Orange County, Dr. Angela Lamont, who's a wonderful, wonderful physician. And, you know, she wrote an email to us and said, this doctor she's actively changing my life, right? She's saving me. She's keeping me alive. I mean, that's how desperate people are. And then there are other, you know, crazy conversations where there's a hurricane in Atlanta, or, you know, New York, we have to get more doctors. We are so busy. We need more help, right? So every day is a critical day. And every day we take a few steps forward, a few steps back, all along going forward, you know, but I couldn't pin one thing. It's a thrilling experience. I mean, I'm having the time of my life. I'm sure Nick is. We're afforded a wonderful opportunity. It's humbling to be maybe eons ahead. And maybe there are days when patients are like, wow, this should be better. And we're thinking, you're right. How do we get there? More to do, more to do. So every day is different, right? I think that's one of the thrills of a startup, isn't it?
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay, let's go down to more granular. What did you guys, you know, max out your own credit cards? Were you had $1 billion from your parents that you inherited, or what? Like, what? How did you guys, from that idea, how do you get to that next step financially?
So the thing about our fundraising is, the one thing we've had going for us since day one in fundraising is that people are rooting for this idea to succeed. People want change in healthcare, right? And thankfully, we did not either have to take money from our parents or max out our credit cards, because we were able to raise money from day one, right? This isn't my first startup. This is my fourth investor-funded startup. It's the first one Renee and I have done together, and by the way, the most successful one, so credit to Renee. But I know how to raise money, right? And we pitched individual investors, institutional investors, and every round we've just kept growing. We raised $200 million in total, and whether it's incredibly famous people like Lionel Richie, who's an extremely supportive investor, or Jamie McCourt, Her Excellency Jamie McCourt, who's the U.S. ambassador to France right now, or the former governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, or Paul Jacobs, who's our chairman and the former CEO of Qualcomm, based down in San Diego, was our largest individual investor.
I think I'm most impressed by Lionel Richie, though.
And I'll tell you about that. I'll tell you that story.
I love his songs.
Well,
everybody does.
I think everybody has.
Every Korean who does karaoke loves Lionel Richie, yes. By the way.
Hello. let's.
I hope Lionel is listening to this.
Well, we will share this with Lionel.
Okay.
He's become a good friend, and he's a phenomenally valuable guy. But when we first met him, literally, this is a true story. I pitched some guy, and that guy was like, hey, I'm going to invest in that. At the end of the call, he's like, well, I don't actually have any money to invest, but I promise you I'm going to make this time up to you. And then he calls me 2 weeks later, and he's like, go meet Lionel Richie at this hotel lobby at 4 o'clock at the Peninsula Hotel in LA. And I called Renee, and I'm like, we got to go meet Lionel Richie, right? And I still thought, is this guy talking about Lionel Richie, whatever? And we go in there, and we sit, and Lionel comes with his girlfriend, Lisa, who's a very bright lady. And they sit down, and he, you know, we do intros, and at first you're like, holy crap, I'm sitting with Lionel Richie. And then he says, okay, what is this all about? And I thought to myself, what is the easiest way to pitch this? And I said, Uber for doctor house calls.
There you go.
Literally, okay. Literally, no exaggeration, no BS, jumped out of his chair, and he said, I'm in, how much can I invest, right? And he's been a supportive investor ever since. Now
you got him at hello.
Yes, I had him at hello. There you go.
I see what you did there. That's good.
Now, whether it's him or Humana with their $100 million, who obviously did a lot more due diligence than, you know, and came in at a much larger stage, the fundamental thing that if I had advice to give entrepreneurs about raising money, it's don't limit yourself and don't think small. Think about transforming an industry. Think about changing the world. Tesla hit a $600 billion market cap today. 2 years ago, there were people saying that company's going to go bankrupt.
Right.
$600 billion, it's more valuable than the next four car companies in the world combined, I think.
Right.
Maybe five or six car companies in the world combined. Because the guy had the courage to say, I'm going to change how people move around, right? And he kept innovating. And entrepreneurs, I was talking to an entrepreneur of helping a mentor yesterday. And he's like, should I ask for 3 million or 2 million? I'm like, dude, ask for 15 million. It's just as hard to get 15 as it is to get 5, right? Yeah. You may as well get more. And so we've had the power of an idea, but we've also had the execution behind it to back up what we're asking for, to be the wind in the sails of that idea, to continue to grow and attract top-notch investors.
It's amazing. So, you know, let's talk a little bit, which is very unique for you guys. Such a successful, you know, high profile company that you've grown, which is amazing. But, you know, husband and wife, right? And my wife lets me think I'm the CEO most of the time, but I know who's the real boss. So what is that really like? I mean, you know, is there like, hey, Nick and Renee, we are no longer co-founders in this conversation. I am your wife or I'm your husband. Like, you know, is this nonstop? Like, can you just give us a sense of the dynamic and what kind of good and bad comes with being a husband and wife co-founder?
Renee?
Take that one. So I will say that Nick is the CEO of our company, and I don't have any confusion about that. And that's important because we have a whole team. Right? So they need to know who their boss is, you know. But I will say I'm the CEO of our house, even though Nick doesn't expect and certainly that causes its own ruffling, but but everyone here, you know, understands I'm the CEO of the house. And then I think actually it's interesting because we both have a perspective, right? My perspective is clinical and patient safety. And his perspective is technology and how do we bring the two? And I actually happen to be very interested in software and technology and product as well. But how do we bring these concepts, these two pathways, and merge them to use software to improve patient outcomes, right? So it's a lot of fun, actually. I mean, we definitely argue, right? I definitely get in trouble for overstepping my bounds and, you know, not acting like the standard person who needs to follow the directions or whatever. I mean, I've got a big mouth. There's no two ways about that. But I think ultimately, you know, the thrill is that it's not just anymore the Nick and Renee show, right? We've gotten very smart people to join this team, very smart physicians and medical assistants and drivers and market directors and engineers and operations people. And those are the people that are making a go of this company. That is, those are the visionaries just as much as we are, right? So that's been, again, I mean, back to that thrilling concept, it's been wonderful to work with such mission-driven people. And that's actually the real joy for Nick and I.
Do you guys have a concept of a work-life balance? I don't want to ask, how do you maintain a work-life balance in case you don't maintain a work-life balance, but assuming you do, is there a way, do you have any tips for how you at some point, you know, shut off the startup for an hour or two or a night or even a whole weekend?
I think Nick is very good at that, actually. I'm not, but what do you say, Bunny?
Yeah, I would say, look, I think there's a couple things, right? The first is, and between Renee and I think I am better at shutting off, right? I will work as long as I have to, but I will almost never, barring an emergency situation, work in the house. Because once I get home, that's my hidey hole. It's my safe place and it's not where I want to think about work. But the other thing that keeps us honest in terms of making sure we have a work-life balance is our three beautiful, incredible children. When we walk in the house, they don't care if we had a good day. They don't care if we had a bad day. They don't care what we're talking about. Literally, our six-year-old will literally grab our phones and say, no more phones, play with us, right? And it forces us to have a work-life balance. And they're at this age, 6, 5, and 2, where they just are, they love being around us and we love being around them. And the blessings of those children are so much greater than anything that's ever going to happen in our professional lives that it very much keeps us grounded, right? And I think that Renee and I have very different complementary skills, right? Fundraising is something I think about and compliance is something Renee thinks about. And I can trust her to do compliance and she can trust me to raise money for Heal, right? Or any number of things, and now with the team. But I think that work-life balance comes mostly from just having something that in our life that's more important than work. And the only thing in our life that is more important than work is our family.
That's a great answer.
That is a great answer. I just, one more on that topic, and then we'll wrap up with LA. But, you know, it's funny. I'm just trying to imagine if I were somebody applying to be, you know, whatever at Heal, I might feel intimidated. I've got a husband and wife, and the question be like, how do I fit into this picture? And in some ways, do you see some of your staff playing kind of, you know, let's ask dad, if I can't get that, ask mom, you know, there must be some weird, interesting, fascinating dynamics with your team that sort of with the husband and wife as the nucleus.
Renee?
I mean, I think, I don't know so much mom and dad, but Nick and I, and really, you know, maybe it's because we are husband and wife, we are very nurturing, right? So, you know, for example, I've been known to spend tons of time with my employees and do one-on-ones and help them with their leadership position or their professional growth. Or, you know, one of my employees comes to mind who, when we started together 4 years ago, I didn't know how she would stay. And now she's such a wonderful part of the team, right? And she's such a you know, powerhouse in her own right. So is that because Nick and I have been mom and dad? I don't know. She might say so, but it's really a part of who we are that we love each other. So we lead with love, right? And I think love can be very passionate. It can be angry. It can be upset. And then you turn around and you're like, this is it. You're my family. I love you. So I'm going to put up with your nonsense, right? We lead that same way. And, you know, maybe some people don't like it. They shouldn't work here. That's who we are. And that's who we want to be, you know? So,
yeah.
So that's a big part of how we care about people and how we care about this company.
It sounds like a great culture.
It's a lot of fun, right? We have a good time. And of course, it's hard. So we're not two people who get frustrated. We're not two people who say, forget it. I'm over it. I'm quitting. I'm done. That never happens. It literally never happens. It's more, okay, this didn't work. Let's try X number of other things. We're solution-minded and we want our team to be solution-minded. And sometimes you need to be loving to show people that they know the answer. It's not obvious. They don't have the confidence. So we want to give that to them.
And I think that, I think the one, for me, being a father has made me a better CEO, right? Partly because I value my time more and partly because I understand I can tell my children 65 times to do one thing right, and I can accidentally say a swear word in front of them. Which one do you think they're going to pick up? The one time swear word, and not the 65 times I told them that 2 + 4 = 6, right? But, and that, I think that helps me with employees. But I think the other thing is, if you wanted to come and work at Heal, you should not be intimidated by the husband-wife dynamic, because it really doesn't exist in the workplace. We're coworkers and colleagues and respected, you know, leaders in the workplace. You should be intimidated by the fact that we're maniacally driven people. And yeah, the team that we recruit, the team is also maniacally driven.
Right.
We're unapologetic about that.
Yeah,
we're unapologetic about caring. This mission for us is personal. It started personally, and it will always be personal for us. So the people that join us for the ride, it's personal for them too. And so many of them tell us how we have affected their lives and how we have affected their families' lives. And so, again, what more could you ask for, right? What a wonderful opportunity to not just change the lives of patients, but also the very people who are helping us build this company.
Yeah, that's amazing. Absolutely. So let's wrap. I know you guys are valuable, need to save lives, literally. So let's talk about LA for a bit. So let's start with the basics. Where's the company and where do you live?
The company's based in Santa Monica. We live in the Pacific Palisades. Renee has been born here in Southern California, and I've been here since I was 3. So we are as close to native Angelenos as you come.
Okay. So I love the fact that you are, you know, an LA startup, raised $200 million and, you know, a leader in your space. So has being in LA helped you, hurt you? Like, what does it feel like being an entrepreneur in Los Angeles?
Los Angeles is truly the world's melting pot, right? And it's the capital of entertainment and media and all of these different things. But I read this once, and I always say this, that there are more outside of their home country, people from more countries live in LA than any other city, as in there are more Koreans outside of Korea in Los Angeles than any other city.
And
more
that's actually true.
Yeah.
And more Ethiopians and more Iranians and more Armenians. And I could go on. I think it's like a crazy number of countries, right? And so it's incredible to be in a place where diversity is not something you look for, it's something that is, right? And we are treating an 85-year-old Armenian and then a 2-year-old Chinese American, and then a 4-year-old that was grandparents were born here, and then a Latin America, a Spanish-speaking person, all in the same day. And whether it's our employees or whether it is our patients, that diversity is a core foundational strength of the city and of Heal, I think.
Yeah. So what about, okay, great. So not everybody can take the, you know, PCH down for 15 minutes with the humpback whales, you know, yeah, doing their thing. But so traffic is not a problem for you, I would imagine. Although Pacific Coast Highway gets pretty jammed up near Santa Monica usually. but let's say we get over that. But, you know, are there things that you wish the city would do more of or can improve to become an even better place for startups?
Renee?
I mean, I think, you know, to Nick's point, we live in one of the best cities in the world, right? And I've had the lucky privilege of having been all over the world to know that the melting pot we have here is wonderful. The talent is wonderful. I do think when it comes to building healthcare, especially people like Nick and I are focused on those that may not be as advantaged as we are, right? So we are focused on delivering access. And so that means that the team that joins us in Los Angeles, they have to understand that we're not an entitled group of people. And so when you build a company that is so mission driven, the type of employee that joins you, she has to feel empowered by that mission. Right. So, you know, the engineer or the operations person that is worried about whether or not the kitchen is stocked and do we have a golf course at the front of the office, those things aren't necessarily as important to us. Right. What's important to me is, do you care about patients? Right. Do you care about the human race? That's what I'm here to focus on. And that's what I want you to be focused on. So I think that maybe that's generational too. You know, maybe that's because I am a doctor, I'm into service, I married a man who's into service, but those are some of the focus points we are at. And certainly we've had no trouble finding people who care about the very same things.
But yeah.
And the thing I'll say about things the city of Los Angeles can do, right? And I'll say three specific things, because I can also take a route from my house to work that's equally short, where I will pass probably 200 homeless people.
Past, yes.
Right. And that's in a city as able as Los Angeles, we have to solve the homelessness problem, right?
Yeah.
So we have to have more public transportation, right? The Metro has done, obviously post COVID and whatever, when construction can happen, but it has to be easier for people to get around, right? And the third and most important thing, which is affected by the first two, is we have to lower the cost of living. We are very privileged. We work hard, but we're also very privileged to live in the Palisades and to work in Santa Monica. But what about the people, 20 million people in this metro area? And we're putting out a lot of great engineers and doctors at places like UCLA and USC and Caltech and all the other great universities. Why are so many of them moving to Texas and Arizona and Florida and other places, and even Washington, which is a blue state but has no state income tax? Because the cost of living here is exorbitant and prices people out of the market. And if we don't keep the best people here, someplace else will become the best people, because not everyone can afford to be here. And if this succeeding, a city succeeding in entrepreneurship, requires every level of employee, from the $15 an hour person to the $500 an hour person and everyone in between. And for every person who makes a lot of money, you need a lot of people who are at the middle and lower end of that spectrum. And you need the supporting industries, food and the housing and all these things. So affordable housing, homelessness, and public transportation are the three things that the city of LA needs to work on.
Yeah. Now, part of the mission of Silicon Sandbox is to highlight those issues, why we love LA and what things, as we love the city, can improve. And, you know, there's a little bit, you know, having spent a lot of years in Silicon Valley, you know, 10 years ago, or even worse before that, LA was seen as kind of the second best city in terms of tech in California. And certainly your example shows that you don't need to be in Silicon Valley to have some great success. So, and I really appreciated the conversation. To wrap up, Renee Dua, that's how you pronounce your name, folks.
Once you've met Nick, you can breathe a sigh of relief. And once you've met Renee, you can do a lot of work.
Okay. And Nick, what are there things that you guys want to leave our viewers and listeners with? Any parting thoughts about Heal or the world or Lionel Richie or whatever you want to say that we didn't cover?
Renee?
Don't forget to get your flu shot. please don't forget to get your flu shot. Use the app, book a house call, get a physical, get your flu shot.
And you can do all of that. And my parting thought is three things. First of all, thank you so much for having us. This was a truly pleasurable interview with both of you.
We appreciate the opportunity.
Secondly, everything that Renee just said, your flu shot, your physical, whatever healthcare needs you have, go to heal.com, H-E-A-L.com, or that right there. And the third thing I will say is LA is the city of dreams. It's people you came here to become in Hollywood. People, if I had to pick to do a startup in Silicon Valley versus Los Angeles, I would pick LA any day of the week and twice on Sunday. And I can say that because I've done four of these here in the last 20 years, right? Back when LA was the redheaded stepchild of startups to today, it's an important part of the scene and companies are leaving San Francisco. LA has a diversity of industry and people that no place else in the world has.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Nick and Renee. Really appreciated the conversation. And thank you for our viewers and listeners for watching again for Silicon Sandbox. And we'll see you next time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.